Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, and welcome to the Net Worth Podcast, where we talk all things WTA and handicap the WTA. I'm Noops, and joining me as always from sunny, beautiful Sacramento, anyway, I assume it's sunny, is Spread Astaire. How you doing today, bud?
You're right. It is sunny and beautiful here. It's usually pretty easy to hit your wager that it'll be sunny in California.
I love it. Nice big favorite, cashing early. What a great start. And south of the border, actually, this time, and when I say south of the border, I mean in the United States, everyone's favorite Canadian calling us from, I believe, Florida, possibly sunny also. How's it going, Jorge?
It is sunny and warm and not Toronto down here, so I'm doing great.
Ugh, I'm so jealous. It's terrible out here. It's like 30 degrees and it's going to snow, and ugh, I'm just going to be stuck inside the house, which is wonderful because we have all this awesome tennis to watch. So we wanted to get together, kind of do a mid-tournament check-in here on the Australian Open. I think for starters, let's dive into kind of the last week and what we saw. There was three matches we had circled. The first, and I think what has absolutely been hands down the best match of the tournament so far and was just really incredible to watch, Amanda Anisimova absolutely whips Arena, the Amazonian warrior Princess Sabalenka. I'm frankly too disturbed and upset by this to talk about it. So Spread, your thoughts.
Well, I don't know if it was the best match of the tournament, probably the best performance of the tournament with the way that Anisimova played. Unbelievable. The idea of her winning wasn't crazy, but for her to win in that fashion was definitely surprising. And she even hit some shots that I know that she herself looked surprised at how well she was playing. So be interested to see if she continues it today. But, wow, I mean, talk about a star on the rise. I was watching with a friend who doesn't really watch much tennis, and I said, boy, you're watching a star being born right now. So great performance by her, and be interested to see how she does today against Kvitova.
So what do you think? Go ahead, Jorge.
Sorry, I was going to say, I'm super happy Spread hit a lot of the points I wanted to talk about, because I was like, oh my goodness, I've got so much I want to talk about Amanda Anisimova with, but I completely agree. Best performance, not quite obviously the best match to watch. Not unexpected in the win, but more unexpected in the fashion, I agree with as well. And for me, I think people really need to watch Amanda Anisimova, because you take a look at her on-court interview after the match. She alluded to how much she's looked up to Maria Sharapova. She's 5'11", nearly 6 feet tall, very much like Maria, not quite as tall, but she hits and she serves like her. But without, you know, the controversies yet, because she's so young. And I think the big difference is, look at the brand Maria Sharapova's built. Anisimova is going to have that exact kind of path open to her in the social media age, and she does social media well, and she doesn't have that kind of Maria. I think tries to look very, you know, composed and humble on court, but you can kind of see through that. I love Maria Sharapova, but you can kind of see that she does have that ego, even when she's trying to act humble and thank fans. Whereas you can just see right now, Amanda Anisimova is truly an innocent 17-year-old overwhelmed by what's going on. And I think if she can keep that and not get jaded, she's going to be a star on and off the court. And you know, watch out for her, just in every respect.
As someone that gets really excited anytime we have a great American player, it was just stunning to watch a young 17-year-old play so well. You know, I'm as big of an Arena Sabalenka fan as anybody at this point, but it was incredible. It was, and I liked the way you said it, Jorge. It wasn't just that she won, it was how she won. She came out and from the absolute first game, I think broke her on first serve and never looked back. Didn't really look afraid. Sabalenka had a couple moments where it looked like she was able to generate some break points and some good opportunities, and immediately, if not, you know, the next point, if not the one after that, Anisimova really put her foot down and closed out there. So just a really impressive win, and someone that's going to be exciting to watch. We've got her here in the final 16, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. Another match, pretty controversial. I believe it started around 1:30 in the morning local time, which is the latest start time, I think, for any Grand Slam match, let alone here at the Australian Open. Garbiñe Muguruza played Joanna Konta in a three-set battle, which was really fun to watch. What did you think of that, Jorge?
Well, my main takes came from the aftermath, and everyone, you know, Konta talking about how it was dangerous. Now, I get that it's inconvenient. I get that it's not ideal. I get that it's annoying. I get that there's no fans left, and that the personnel and the umpires and you know, ball kids and spectators, and it's not fun for anyone. they could have moved it courts, but then they don't get the show court. They could have switched it days, but then the players complain about no rest. So ultimately, I was really angry with Konta's comments about it being dangerous and people trying to defend her. You know, that's her opinion, and you don't know because you're not an athlete there. It's like, look, this is a one-off. It doesn't happen all the time. I thought the match was great. And they replayed it the next day all over North America. I thought it was phenomenal. And it wouldn't have gone so late had it not been so good. They started around 12:30 a.m. local time. You know, if one of these two had to wipe the floor with the other one, it would have been done by 1:30, 1:45. We've seen plenty of slam matches over by that time. But putting aside the garbage potential opinions and you know, controversies, I don't feel bad for Konta. It's her fault that her draw was so tough. But boy, did she look good this week for someone that went out in the second round. I'll be watching her because she's dipping down and playing some international events. I looked at some entry lists today. She'll be in Acapulco. And because this is a handicapping podcast, I would say, you know, keep an eye on her moving forward on hard courts. I think out of the limelight is where she thrives. That British media can be so tough. That has kind of shifted away from her. And I would say, definitely keep an eye on her in some of the international hard court tournaments. I think she could be a great outright pick if her price drops a bit, maybe a rolling parlay kind of deal. If you don't like the outright or has a bad draw but can get two or three matches really easily as a you know, minus 500 or 600 favorite, roll a couple together and capitalize that way.
Yeah, it was it was just a really great match, even though it was on so late. Obviously, a lot of controversy around that. I tend to agree with you. You know, they're professional athletes. You know, this is what they do for a living. They place these sports at weird hours of the night. It's a grand slam. They both had the next day off. Spread, were you up late enough to see it all?
Well, it was so originally I was going to watch because I had just thrown together like a square parlay with a bunch of favorites, and I needed Garbine to close it out. So originally it's scheduled for about 1:30 a.m. my time. So okay, I can stay up for that one. I'll make it up for that one. And then I think what probably bothered Konta was because the other matches ran late because of the rain and moving courts. I'm not exactly sure the exact reason, but they switched the order of her match and the Serena match. So I can understand why she was a little miffed about that. But, I mean, that's the way this works. At the end of the day, this is entertainment. Their salaries are there because of, you know, the fans play top dollars to see the best players, you know, as, you know, meritocratic as that sounds, or, you know, however you want to talk about that, but that's what happened. So I do think that, you know, it's kind of a rough spot, but so I only saw the highlights because I don't think it started till about 6 a.m. my time, because I went to sleep, you know, after I realized that the matches got switched and I didn't have any action on Serena. I said, I'll just go ahead and catch her highlights tomorrow. I'll get some sleep right now. And I woke up around 6 or 7, and the third set it was starting. And I said, wow, this is unbelievable. I can't believe it was going this late. So I did see the end. I was kind of tired, but I thought Garbine looked great. But like Jorge said, nothing to take away from Konta's performance. I think that was just a tough draw for her. She looked great against Tomjanovic. She was the better player on the big points and really showed her poise and experience in the Tomjanovic match. And then, you know, tough loss to Muguruza, but there's no shame in losing to a player of Muguruza's caliber.
Yeah, I thought Joanna Konta acquitted herself very nicely, you know, despite everything that came out after the match. The match with Tomjanovic that you were talking about, Spread, was really great before that. Looked really nice, looked confident. I'm always impressed anytime you see someone win multiple tie breaks, especially in the WTA where we don't see a lot of them. And Joanna Konta looked really comfortable in those moments winning those big points. And then the match against Muguruza, well, again, we'll talk more about her a little bit later. You know, one of the really great Grand Slam performers. You know, you can't feel upset ever losing to her in big matches like this. So really entertaining match, a little controversy, but hopefully that all blows over and doesn't become a focus. The final match, I think, guys, we wanted to talk about was in the first round. We had a three-set, just really great match to watch. Julia Gorgeous loses in three sets to Danielle Rose Collins. What do you think, Spread? Another American up-and-comer that we should be watching for?
Yeah, that killed one of my favorite outrights there. I think we kind of know about Danielle Collins due to her little hard court run at the beginning of last year, and then we kind of written her off because she fell off towards the end of the year. But she looked great. I'll be honest, I did not I didn't see the comeback coming. Gorgeous rolled in the first set, then she lost a tough tie break, but I figured, okay, she's going to get together and win in the third. So for Collins to go ahead and take that third set against an accomplished player such as Gorgeous, who did not beat herself, Collins won the match. I thought that was a an impressive display of a poise on her part, and she's obviously continued with a good win over Caroline Garcia next. So, you know, it's been a good tournament for her so far, and she's kind of getting that form back that she had in early 2018 when she looked like she was, you know, an American on the rise to look out for.
What did you think, Jorge? Did you get a chance to watch that one?
I did. I was actually, this was back in Toronto because I believe it was, yeah, it was the first round. So it was Sunday, Monday night before I had left. It was Sunday night, I believe. I believe it was day one because I was ready to go out and meet some friends and I decided I'll wait.
Yeah, I think it was one of the first matches on.
Yeah, it was. It was. I think it was first match on because I was waiting to go out and meet people. And I said, let me watch the end of this. This is getting really good. And of course, it has some tension in it too. I don't think Gurgis, you know how Germans are, the kind of robotic, efficient, get everything done, don't show emotion kind of people. She did not like how Collins was getting a little bit more, you know, passionate, and especially how often she was getting pumped up after winning points. So she gave a little let's go back at her and stared her down. So it was a little intense too. But I thought that, you know, Danielle Collins had a, like Spread said, she had a great run at the beginning of last year. Both at Miami and Indian Wells, I guess they're both premier mandatory events, the semifinals at Miami after as a qualifier, right? She had to qualify for that one. And then at Indian Wells, she beat Madison Keys. She beat up-and-comer Sophia Juk, to get to the fourth round where she lost to CSN. So, you know, fourth round in semis there. She won the Newport Beach 125K event last year around this time. So something about the early season really gets her going. And in her on-court interview after the match, she said she loved playing in Australia in the heat, right? She's from California, from Florida, you know, both of those places, grew up in one, I believe, and plays in the other now. So she's used to the heat. And I think that's something that really plays it to her advantage right now in this early season when they're in these hot conditions, and maybe kind of humid more so than hot, that really drains players. She has no problem dealing with those. So yeah, I think it was a surprise anyway, and we're going to get into futures, and it took one of mine down as well, but it was a great match from entertainment perspective to just overall.
Anytime you get a three-set match like that, you know, second set tiebreak to stay alive for Danielle Rose Collins, and comes out, and I'm trying to remember the 6-4. I think the break in that set was pretty late. Really entertaining and a good week for her. Comes out, beats Gorgeous, has no problem with Sasha Vickery, and then takes care of Caroline Garcia here to make the final eight. So let's actually jump into that. Starting tonight, they've got the top half of the bracket playing. Let's go match by match, guys, and give our thoughts here.
Real quick, do we want to jump in with this? People maybe we're disappointed in for the that have already been eliminated before we move on?
You know what, Spread? You're right. I forgot we didn't cover our futures. So, you know, kind of as a little offhanded comment there, we all have people we should be pretty disappointed in, ourselves nonetheless. Looking back, I don't know about you guys, but I had Gorgeous at 40-1 and Mertens at 66-1, both no longer in the field. You have anybody left, Jorge?
I do. I have Ashley Barty, who's in tough tonight against Maria Sharapova, and I'm hoping the withdrawal against in doubles, that is, sorry, is not too impactful. I'm hoping that she kind of just wanted to get out of that kind of the being in both competitions, so you know, used a slight tweak to get out of it, and we'll still be competitive in singles.
How about you, Spray? You got anybody left?
So I lost the same two that Jorge mentioned, and I also lost Siniaková, but I'll tell you what, none of the three players that I lost on really disappointed me. Like I said, I felt that Collins won the match. I don't think that Gorgas lost that match. We knew that Siniaková had that tough first round, you know, so we knew that was always a possibility. And Mertens just ran into, you know, a fantastic in-form, you know, slam Madison Keys. So I wasn't disappointed in their performances. I'll tell you the actual performances I was disappointed in, and of course, Elena Ostapenko, don't really need to say much about that, but I was hoping for more from her. One that really surprised me is Kasatkina, however you pronounce it, to go up 3-0 and then lose 12 games in a row. I mean, that was tough to watch. She's one of my favorite players, and I'd always kind of labeled her as a fighter, you know, and I'm not saying that she didn't fight in that match, but not that Bezinski is that bad, but to lose in that fashion was very disappointing. And then one other one is, and we had been talking about it, you know, the Australian, will the success of the Asian tour, you know, the Asian swing translate over? And Wang Chung was one that we talked about. So, you know, she did okay against Fiano Fierro, but I expect her to win that. Looked pretty good against Krunic, who really hasn't been playing that well lately. And then her first real test for me to really say, okay, the success in the Asian swing is going to catapult and translate into the rest of the year. Savastova just, you know, beat her handily. She really didn't struggle at all to win that match. So it's kind of disappointed that, you know, we weren't able, that Wang's success on the Asian tour didn't translate here over here to Australia.
Yeah, I was going to try and be nice there, Spread, and skip over the Ostapenko thing, but good being honest there. yeah, Kasatkina, it's hard to think of someone, you know, at the end of last year watching that video of her winning Moscow and her coach talk about being the Russian wall and all that and just come out just absolutely flat as a pancake to start the year. Any other thoughts in the last week, Jorge? Anybody that gave you some concern?
I think I'm going to double down on Daria Kasatkina. It's not just last week. She's 0-3 on the season. She's been not losing to great players. The serve is completely... And I mean, we're not talking about someone with a big serve who's had their serve abandoned them. We're talking about someone who's a light server to begin with, double faulting like crazy. Something is way out of whack with her. And if she doesn't you know, get things sorted out soon, she's going to really fall down the rankings. She could have one of those Jeannie Bouchard years where she makes first and second rounds exclusively. Her ranking is good enough to keep getting her, but then, you know, keep getting her to tournaments. But then next year, she'll have to drop down to ITS. And it's plausible because Jeannie's always had a bigger game than her. If Kasatkina has those kind of troubles finding her rhythm that Jeannie had a few years back, she is cooked.
Yeah, it's always sad to watch someone that, you know, I don't think we necessarily think of her as one of the top echelon players, but a very good player and someone who can be fun to watch when she's at her best. Clearly something wrong, it doesn't have it here. So, you know, maybe she'll take some time off or do something here to change things up and get her head right.
Yeah, she's not a top echelon player, but I always considered her kind of like a wild card to win any, you know, non-slammer Masters tournament that she entered. You know, I always consider to have a chance to win any tournament, you know, that was just premier or below. So to see her now just not even able to win in the first round is really disappointing.
Well, Daria, and I'm sure you're listening, we're cheering for you. we hope you do the best, and we just want you to know also that Spread did name a kitty after you. And although that doesn't necessarily bode for the best after he named the last one after Ostapenko, but we have confidence that you can get it together and have a great season and really break the kitty curse.
Yeah, we need you to break my kitten curse.
I'm in negotiations to see how much it's going to cost him to name the third one Arena.
I'm just gonna let that go. I'm so mad. I can't believe she got your butt kicked like that. But enough of being depressed about that. Let's move on to what we've got left. 16 women, 8 matches here in the round of 16. They start with the bottom half tonight. Apologies if you don't get a chance to listen to this, but just wanted to go through the matches and let you guys have a little insight on our thoughts and processes. And like I said, hopefully you do get to listen to it before it starts. So the first match here in my list, Jorge, is Ashley Barty playing Maria Sharapova. And this looks like a funny line to me. Like you said, there was a tweet that came out. She withdrew from the doubles draw because of, quote, an abdominal injury. Now, sometimes we see that and it's true, and sometimes we see it and it's not, but... I was surprised to see the line so close. What are you seeing here, Jorge?
The line was relatively close before the news. I mean, when I got there, the spread was -2.5. I believe the money line was somewhere around 166, which is -145, if I'm not mistaken. And now it's still -135. So it has moved in Sharapova's favor, but it was close from the beginning, and I was surprised it was that close. I guess they expect this to be a tight match, you know, two servers going at it, 7-5, 7-6 kind of deal. Maria in the backhand-to-backhand will be a clear winner, but I don't think Ash is going to be, you know, intimidated by the power. She's going to have the crowd behind her, and I think it all comes down to how hurt is she, really. I love Barty here. I had her with the outright. I was anticipating Woz here, and I was hoping she could find a way to deal with Woz. I think in this match in 2019, maybe 3 years ago, Sharapova had an advantage. I think in 2019, with similar styles, I'd prefer Barty over Sharapova. So the line's tight, probably somewhere, you know, it'd probably be around minus 180, minus 170. I think maybe Maria's name recognition and public casual bettors pushing it down. If you believe in that, if not, you believe only sharp movers, sharp bettors move the lines, then maybe the sharps are on it too. But I favored Barty from the start, and I still haven't budged. I'm thinking it's mainly because she's trying to focus on singles and knows she has a real good shot to get through really deep at home here.
What do you think, Spread? Are you taking a side on this one?
I tell you what, I almost placed my Barty bet, but Sharapova's recent form has prevented me from hitting submit. She looked fantastic against Wozniacki, and I was definitely on the Woz side on that one. I thought Wozniacki was going to win that one, and I thought, you know, that was going to be the style that Sharapova would succumb to, because it would require her to be so precise and to avoid errors, you know, hit the extra winners, the tough things that the retrievers do. And she was able to do it. I mean, she answered the bell, whichever cliche you want to use. I mean, but she showed that she is in pretty much the best form we've seen since her comeback, except for maybe, I remember I was really impressed with her at the French Open as well last year. But so I haven't been able to do it yet, and I don't think I will place one. If I did, though, I think I would go Barty, especially at these close numbers. But I don't want to run against this Sharapova right now. She looks fantastic. And with the extra day off, I don't know if she'll struggle with the fatigue like she has in some of the Masters tournaments. So that's why I haven't placed a bet yet. Lean Barty, but that's going to be a good match.
It's interesting to hear you say, Jorge, the line hasn't moved too much. I actually didn't get a chance to check the opener myself. I've got Bovada open right now. It's minus 145. I'm seeing -2 at minus 105. If the line really hasn't moved, that actually does lead me to believe the injury is not really a big deal. You know, there's obviously people a lot more connected and on the know than we are. So those people, if they knew Barty was hurt, I think we'd see the line move with some big wagers towards Sharapova, and it doesn't seem to be that way. I lean Barty as well. I don't know if I'll end up playing it. Maybe I'll parlay her with something for a little fun. But a good sort of a good first match here, and I think it'll be a lot of fun if Barty is healthy. Jumping into the next match, Angelique Kerber plays Danielle Collins, a really big number here, minus 750. Kerber laying five games with a total of 19. Any angles here, Spread?
The one that I was looking at, I have not placed it yet, but it was what I was looking at, was the plus 5.5. I was surprised that this line was so big, given Collins' recent form. I don't think I want to chance the money line because Kerber's been playing great as well and blowing people off the court, but I think this is going to be a little different than playing Burrell. So I was looking at the plus 5.5.
I'm the opposite. I think Kerber's just been rolling everyone. I know, you know, Beatrice and Admaya's kind of one trick on, you know, immobile pony that serves well. Hersog's a clay pair. Kimberly Burrell is a young Aussie wild card. So it certainly Collins has played the more impressive, has had the more impressive path to get here. But I think Kerber's so good at redirecting pace. Last year on grass, which is much more Kerber's speed, I guess, even though she's not the big hitter in the matchup, she absolutely dominated Collins 1-1. I see this one going as like, yeah.
I think, on grass too.
I think this will be a 3-3 type deal. I think Collins will get games on serve, but Kerber's just one of those. She's not a pure pusher or pure returner. She redirects pace well. And I don't know if Collins has seen many players like this. Look at the players she's beaten. Gerges is, you know, a hitter. So is Sasha Vickery, although much more erratic and much to a much lesser extent in terms of overall capabilities as the others. And Garcia's a hitter and well-rounded opponent, but has not been playing well this year at all to start the season. I don't think she's seen this style. I think in you know, big hitting, she can match up with them well. I want to see how she deals with Kerber, you know, moving her corner to corner all match long. And if she gets frustrated and can deal with it, I don't think she can. I think it'll end up something like the first set's close and she loses it, I think she's, you know, a little fatigued and Kerber just steamrolls her in the second. But I like the minus 5.5 here.
I'm kind of right down the middle. It looked priced just about right to me. I like your case, Jorge, for the minus five. I'm seeing like minus five at minus 155 here. I don't love laying that kind of juice. I think if you're looking at a Kerber bet, under 19 might actually be good. If you like Collins, I think the total is maybe even the angle here. You kind of pick, do you think Kerber's going to come out and really play well, then grab the under 19. If you think Collins is going to come out and be competitive, see if you can find an over 19 or a plus. One and a half sets.
I see that because on the under 19, that's basically the 6-4, 6-3, minus five, and then you push instead of losing, and you don't have to pay minus 155. I kind of like that.
Yeah, and then in terms of the over, if Kerber, it does actually go three sets and Kerber wins, you leave yourself open to losing a plus five with like a 6-2, 6-4, 6-2 kind of thing. It can be tough.
A minus five is really hard to hit in a three setter.
Yeah, it is, but it's possible in a WTA when you have so many, bagels, breadsticks. Yeah, and Kerber, you look at her matches. Like you said, Jorge hasn't played the best competition, but has just absolutely crushed everybody. She's been a really good fantasy player for those of you that get into the daily fantasy. The next match. Now, this line's moved a lot. Petra Kvitova is playing Amanda Anisimova. I think a couple of us, I know, Jorge, you got on spread. I don't know if you joined, too, when this opened at Anisimova. No. Plus 165. I think there was actually even plus 175 and plus 170s around, all the way down to plus 135 with Kvitova as a minus 165 favorite. Now, Jorge, I know you already bet Amanda Anisimova. So, spread, why didn't you join in with us?
I think that this is going to be... I mean, we talked to Sabalenka being a test, but Kvitova, to me, is still on a whole nother level. Sabalenka has flashed the talent. She's come through in the smaller tournaments, but she doesn't have the Grand Slam pedigree or even necessarily the Masters pedigree that Petra Kvitova has. I think Kvitova's looked fantastic. A little worried about fatigue, but she won Sydney last week, beating a very informed Ash Barty. And I'll be interested to see how Anisimova deals with it. And I know I said this against Sabalenka, I don't think that she's ready for a player of this caliber, but I kind of feel the same way with Kvitova. So the number definitely didn't entice me. I mean, I think I would have wanted to take plus 200 or more, and it's actually dropping so much. I'm actually interested to look to get in on angle with Kvitova.
I'll keep this quick because by the time we release it, this one will have started. But analysis is still key in these types of things. My thought process was I'll take the 3.5 games. I think she keeps it close. I'm not ready, and I urge people that will hear this before the match starts not to get carried away with recency bias. That was the best match we've seen this season at the WTA level. Okay, any player, any tournament that I've seen, and I've watched a ton of tennis, as we all do, that won't be replicated. It is going to be nearly impossible to replicate that exact performance. If she plays that way, sure, snag the plus 151 at Pinnacle, which, by the way, opened at plus 176, so it's down a quarter already. But sure, if you think she's going to play that exact match again, go for it. It's not going to happen. Okay, that's the whole deal with recency bias, is that no player will ever be as bad as they were last match if they were terrible. No one's going to be as good as they were next match as they were if they were amazing. So I grabbed the 3.5 games. I think her serve and her power will keep it close. Kvitova is not a renowned returner. Anisimova isn't. Neither is a great mover. So if both of them can land some first serves, force their opponents to leave them a sitter and then crush it, you're not gonna have someone running all over the court forcing you to hit that extra shot. I think we should see a lot of clean service games, so I'm good with a 7-5, 4-6, 6-3 kind of Kvitova win to cover me by the hook there. So I took the spread. I didn't take Anisimova money line.
I grabbed the money line.
One other thing I think works against Anisimova here is the left-handed. I know she's a little younger, and like we talked about, junk ballers against the teens. I also think that sometimes they can struggle with a left-hander. I think that's another thing that works to Kvitova's favor.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle. I probably don't think about it as much as I should. Do you have any opinion on that, Jorge? Lefties and righties and all that?
A lot of players do struggle. You can see it in their hold break numbers. It throws them off. Some of them, the wings are the opposite, but you're so used to taking a ball on your backhand and going cross-court to someone else's backhand that even if entering the match, in the heat of the moment when you've got a second to react before you've got to hit the ball, sometimes you forget. You hit the ball, you realize, damn, that's their forehand. I was the beneficiary of that in high school. I wasn't a phenomenal player. more of a push or counter punch than anything. A lot of players got themselves caught in forehand to backhand rallies with me. Luckily for them, I was one of those rare players that has a better backhand, but they're trying to pick on what they think is a backhand and giving it to their forehand. You know, it does impact a lot of players.
That's interesting. That's something we'll try to keep in mind, and I'll see if I can look and update kind of the way I handicap.
Jump
That's
right
really
back
interesting.
In here real quick, because I've got the Anisimova has played in the last 52 weeks just three lefties. Kvitova, who she beat at Indian Wells, Mihaela Buzărnescu, who she lost to in three sets, and Taylor Townsend, who beat her at the U.S. Open. Her hold breaks are down around 101%. As opposed to, you know, well over 100, I think, around, and her total points are at 97 instead of 107. So she does see, in a very small sample size, a dip in performance. Ironically, the best player she played is the only win she had, and it's who she's playing tonight. So,
but if you remember, right. Kvitova was drop-dead exhausted in that one, and the heat was very bad that day, and we know that Kvitova with her asthma struggles in the heat. Now today, I do not think that the conditions
exactly.
will be so hot.
And you look at the other two, so where you know the conditions may not have played into it, and she struggled mightily against two players that are far, you know, less talented than Petra Kvitova, and the numbers bear it. Even though it's a small sample size, I mean, the small sample size kind of plays to that point. She hasn't seen much of it, and when she has, she struggled with it. So. Something to keep in mind there. I still like the fact that the serves can keep it close. You know, she's not playing Buzărnescu again, who could kind of break through her. So, I think play the spread, if anything.
It should be a really interesting match to see how, you know, again, young Anisimova, to see if she can continue to play at a really, really high level here, especially against a high-quality player like Kvitova. The last match we have here on the Sunday morning, Saturday night matches for us in North America. Sloane Stephens plays Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova.
No. This
Jorge,
is
do you have any plays here?
Stay away. I'm going to record it and watch it or wait for the replay on ESPN tomorrow. Thoroughly enthused by the prospects of the match, but not a chance I'll be playing this match. You know, Pavs looks good. Sloane looks good. I can see a path to victory for both. I don't see any discernible edge, so it's a pass.
Yeah, I was feeling the same way. This morning I woke up and really wanted to bet Sloane Stephens and thought about it some more, and I think I'll push it to the side and leave it be. Spread, do you have anything for the people?
Same deal with you guys. I think the number's right, and you don't want to play spread with Sloane Stephens because she gets behind in a set, and it's not the third, she will tank. She's just already moving on to the next one. She's not interested in wasting energy to make the scoreline look good. So I stay away from Stephens' spread. And just a quick look, I think minus 155 is about right. You know, if we're just picking, you know, for our brackets or whatever, I definitely like Stephens to advance. But I think Pavlyuchenkova's got a shot. Looked great against Sasnovich. Just a great match, although that's a good matchup for her. But I think the number's about right. I will not be playing this match.
Well, just remember, folks, you don't have to bet them all. And this one, we will certainly be skipping. So diving into the next day's matches, we got the top half of the draw. So Mona Halep, who's looked really good for her first couple matches here, plays against an absolute red-hot flame shooting out of her butt, Serena Williams. What do you think, Jorge? Does Simona have any chance?
Terrible for her, and I think that I've watched Serena Williams win total games 36-9, lesser competition or not. I don't think Serena is someone you really look at the QOC because she's better than everyone in a tier of her own. So I don't really care how bad the opponents she plays are or how good they are. She dominates the number two player in the world as much as she dominates the number 100. And right now, she is dominating and in top form. Not a chance I would look at Halep here.
What do you think, Spread? Is Serena really reached top level? Is she at the point now where she should be pretty much beating everybody?
Yeah, could be unfortunate for us because it's not going to be fun for our handicapping if we're just picking Serena outright to every Grand Slam. But you know what? It's odd to me is that in my head, you know, thinking about a matchup like this, I would think that Halep would have the tools to trouble Serena. But you look at the head-to-head, and that's never really happened. The last time they played was the U.S. Open in 2016, and Halep managed to get a set off her, but for the most part, she's only beat her once, and that was in 2014. Other than that, Serena has dominated this matchup. And the plus 200 jumped out to me at first, but with Halep, to me, I don't think that she's necessarily in top form yet. I think that she looked good. I think that she's pretty close. But with her not even being in top form, I don't see how you make a wager on Halep here. And I think that
someone before Noobstrom's back in case for this someone bet. Hammered this line when it came out at Pinnacle. It opened at plus 239. And within 11 minutes, I'm looking at, this is via TennisExplorer.com. Within 11 minutes, it was down 35 cents to plus 204. Someone crushed that opening line for Simona. It then dropped another 19 cents 9 minutes later as another person hammered the line down to plus 185. Since then, it's returned to plus 220. But we've seen some interesting line movement here. There's two people, or you know, either the public poured money in simultaneously, or two heavy hitters really poured money in within 20 minutes of that line opening at Pinnacle onto Simona Halep. Something to note there. I don't think she's got a chance personally, but I am looking at the line movements in there, and it is really strange to see that kind of thing. It pushed Serena to minus 200 from opening at 1.37, whatever that is in American odds, and now it's back to 1.4, so within 3 cents of the opener. But those early, you know, kind of pummelings do kind of make you wonder what's going on.
Yeah, that's wild. It's one of the most interesting things to look at in these big matches, you know, where the lines open and where they close. You know, obviously you don't want to be chasing steam or even really thinking about that, but to see that much movement that early, and I think it's what you said, Jorge, there's probably two people who came in and placed big bets on Halep. I can't imagine a book changing a line just from public action that quickly. That must have been two really sharp guys coming in placing big bets, which is surprising. I mean, maybe at 240 there is some value just from a numbers perspective. I mean, Halep, you know, number one player in the world, playing at a really high level. Yes, the head-to-head is all Serena, but you got to think maybe she has a chance.
I would think that their thinking would be similar to mine, as in the new Serena, the one that's come back post-pregnancy. Her biggest struggle seemed to be against completely defensive players that force her to hit the extra shot. The players that don't move so well that she can just blow off the court, she does well. But, you know, the Kerber or Wimbledon final comes to mind, whereas, you know, you could just see she was flustered having to hit, you know, what she considered to be three winners per point. And the idea would be that if Halep can replicate that performance, she could give her the same problems. That would be the only reason I would see, you know, a heavy person coming in on Halep, because I'll tell you what, I saw that line too, and I couldn't believe that it was that wide. I thought it would be a lot closer. So, I mean, I really thought it was going to be open like plus.
You know, that has to be
Halep plus 150.
That has to
plus
be the angle they were looking at, because her Wimbledon maybe they're thinking victories. Arantxa Rus, Victoria Tomova, I think, Kristina Mladenovic, Evgenia Rodina, Kamila Georgie, Julia Gerges. Not one of those is renowned as a mover. All of them rely on serving and hitting. So that's an interesting point. And then, you know, obviously San Jose, Cincinnati, she struggled. She was talking about the depression, separation anxiety, that kind of thing. Came back at the U.S. Open, went to the final, lost to a hitter there, but the encouraging part is, you know, or look at Karina Vidhoff, not a mover. Venus Williams, not a mover. Kaya Kanepi, same thing. Pliskova, same thing. The Sevastova win was impressive, I guess, in that regard, but that's an interesting point from Spread, and I wonder if that's what those particular bettors were looking at, because that's big movement. And remember, that's on the money line. This isn't someone hammering Simona's spread. This is on the money line. People are at least two are liking her big to win the whole match.
That's really interesting. I actually see value in Serena at this price. I grabbed the minus four games. You know, minus 250. It's tough to really call any money line that big valuable. But you guys are making a pretty good case for Simona Halep at plus 200 or better. Have you talked yourself into a bet spread?
Not yet, but I have till tomorrow to decide. If I do, I'll probably grab the Simona money line, right, or the Serena spread. I mean, it's just so funny to hear that. But I think those are the two places where the
seconded
smart bets present themselves, because I think if Serena wins, she rolls. I don't see Serena just winning. I don't see Halep keeping it close if she can't play. So
So we're all Serena there. Although, you know, again, an interesting case for Halep. That'll be a really fun match
to
watch.
Yeah, you might see me post it by tomorrow. I might end up, you know, just deciding that it should be plus 150, plus 160, and I'm getting plus 200, you know. And I'm actually seeing plus 225 on dimes right now. So it looks like the Serena buyback is there. And other than those two guys, I can't imagine. I can see Serena's going to probably be in every Moneyline Square parlay place from here to tomorrow. So I could see that price be even better by tomorrow. I
mean, wait to see the
250,
the DFS percentage, and
to yeah. if, world if, number
can
one.
Can one of you note this down? I don't have my phone on me or a pen or paper around. Can one of you note this down to check in next week on what the DFS percentage ownership was? Because it's going to be a full week.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'll bet you that DFS ownership percentage, because it'll be if DFS DK coordinates with their sports book as they usually do, because you usually see the highest money lines, the most expensive money lines are always the most expensive players. It's always correlated to the odds. And I think that, you know, Serena at 1.4 minus 210 or two, whatever that is going to make her a middle of the pack kind of price. And you know that she's going to be owned by like 60% of people tomorrow.
Oh, I imagine it'll be even higher than that. I actually wonder what her average ownership percentage is. She's always expensive.
Do you remember last year when they mispriced Buzarnescu and they had her as she was overwhelmingly a favorite in her match, and they had her priced as, you know, completely it was reversed. So instead of being, you know, 10,000, she was 5,200. And I think 71% or 65% of people had her in their lineups. And you know, some people decided to play contrarian and say, well, if I win without her, and or if she loses, it knocks out 65%. She won handily, and you couldn't win without her. It just was one of those things where you try to get too cute. But, you know, it's one of those scenarios, again, you're going to see the public is going to back her like 65% DFS when you have so many choices. She'll be in almost every lineup.
It's always a good idea for you, those of you playing daily fantasy. Just pull up some odds in a book and just make sure that the right person favored is actually priced that way. So let's jump into the next match, actually. We've got Karolina Pliskova playing Garbiñe Muguruza. Line pretty even here. Pliskova a slight favorite. Again, always check as many books as you can to make sure you get the best of the number. I'm looking at Bovada right now. Pliskova's minus 125. Muguruza's even. I think you guys each had slightly better prices on Muguruza. What do you see, Jorge? Anything to play here?
I think this is going to be one that goes right down to the wire. I wasn't originally wanting to play it. I've done some research. I do like a few angles that Muguruza presents. I'm gathering notes on both sides and trying to find some pluses maybe for Karolina. And if I can do that, I'll probably leave it alone. I would say if you're going to play, I'd lean Muguruza. Some people look at that 7-2 head-to-head. You can cut out the Fed Cup win. That's a completely different animal from 2017. That's 6-2. Two of those, I always only go within the last 3 or 4 years. So the three 2015 matches bring it down to 5-1. Muguruza is a different animal at slams. Her career win percentage, 73% versus non-slam events, 64%. It's a big difference. I would lean Muguruza here, but I'll be looking more into Karolina and what she presents in this matchup to see if I can keep away from this match.
You like anything here, Spread?
I like Pliskova. I think that I think the matchup is fantastic for her. I also think that kind of offsetting Garbine's slam dominance, or you know, her ability to raise her level for the Grand Slams is the Renee Stubbs factor. I think that rather than making some sort of technical adjustments to her game, I think that most of the improvement that Stubbs has done with Pliskova has been the mental improvement. She doesn't get down on herself when things are going bad. She's able to kind of shake things off. Now, of course, a lot of that has been with the on-court coaching. I think this is her first slam since hiring Stubbs. I think that was post-US Open that she's hired her. Might have to correct me if I'm wrong there. But I really like the way that she has her playing, and I think the matchup is great for her because I think her ability to get the easy games on serve forces pressure on Garbine to hold her serve. And I think that it's just rough for Garbine. I think it's just a rough matchup. I think that Pliskova just gets too many free games on serve, and that Garbine needs to be perfect on her serve, and that Pliskova can take advantage if she has a service game where she's not hitting her first serves, because Pliskova's great. She's not that good a returner on first serves, but she's great at attacking second serves, so much to the fact that it pretty much neutralizes her below-average movement.
The fun part for me is
like Pliskova in this match.
Muguruza kind of had like that Konta match we talked about. It kind of almost serves as a preview or a practice match against Pliskova. Konta served the lights out that night. Like the stat pack there that the WTA official Twitter account shared. I mean, Konta had probably a more impressive stat line in that match. It was nasty. She was playing top of her game, serving the lights out, and Garbiñe found a way to come through 7-5 in the third set. Konta is not Pliskova, I understand that. But in that particular match, she almost mirrored a lot of what Pliskova is able to do, maybe minus a few miles per hour. And I think Muguruza can use that as kind of a template for the game plan she'll require to win this match. So I'm really intrigued to see it. Pliskova dropped a set against Brengel. I'm not going to harp on that as an angle because, sure, she dropped 4-6 when she never should have, ever, in a million years, ever. But she did come back and win 12 of the final 13, so I'm not concerned there. Garbi's two matches against the lesser hitters, man, did she wipe the floor up both of them. So I think it's going to be a great match to watch, regardless of what side you come down on.
Totally agreed. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Eileen Muguruza, you know, Jorge, following a lot of things that you said, her great slam record. I think, you know, personally, she's, for those of you that watch the men's tour and are familiar with Fabio Fognini, similar to him in that when they're motivated, they're just about as good as anybody. And it's hard to figure out what weeks Muguruza is going to try and what weeks she's not. But these Grand Slams she really takes seriously. And I like her all-around game here to play against Pliskova, who, you know, hasn't played poorly but hasn't looked great, in my opinion. Third match we've got here, Naomi Osaka playing Anastasia Sevastova. I actually already placed a wager on this a little bit earlier. Osaka opened minus 140. I'm seeing minus 150 now. I think this is a really good spot for her, and just and generally a better player than Sevastova. The one interesting thing about Osaka that I've seen this week, we talked about this when I think a little bit at the end of last season. At one point, I actually looked up her record in three set matches and found that just it was terrible. Anytime she had to go and come back after losing the first set, it almost never happened. But she's shown a lot of fight this week, and really just looks kind of like a more mature
from 2 player. Weeks ago. Sure.
What do you think, Jorge? I mean,
I'm not hugely sold on that angle. 2 weeks ago, she was moping and admitted to acting childish on the court. Perhaps she fought through Shea and a great win. I mean, we all knew that could pose trouble. I know our friend Ace the Tennis, Ace Previews over at Betfair there. In the end, he posted his review thread. He had Shea to win, so that must have been a tough second and third set to watch. But, you know, good on her for coming back. I don't buy into it. I think Sevastova is even better than Shea. I think she provides the same junk ball challenge. We've talked about many times head-to-head not being something we use too much if it's not recent. Well, they played twice last year, once this year, and once in 2017 in Toronto. And in Toronto, Osaka got her in straights, and then after that, Sevastova got her twice in straights. And then in Brisbane this year, Sevastova managed a set before losing a tight third. And I think Sevastova's, I mean, that match against Qian Wang, I mean, Wang wasn't playing terribly. Her serves were landing. She was holding consistently. She couldn't find a break point. And I think that, you know, Sevastova's at the top of her game right now. Redlining, she's in form. She's pulled off upsets at slams before. If you don't remember that Sharapova match, I do, only because I had money on her pre-match. I doubled down a set down at like plus 290. She came back and won. She's claimed scalp. She knows how to do it. She's extremely good at formulating a game plan to beat better players. I'm not going anywhere near this match. The opening line almost got me. When I saw it, you know, at less than 140, I was like, how can I not? And then I started to sit back and said, you know what? This is a pass for me. I think Sevastova is just, you know, her history against Osaka and her form is kind of, you know, sketchy to me. So I'm not going to. Makes the play sketchy to me, so I'm going to leave it alone.
How about you, Spread? What are you seeing here? Any leans, any plays?
I like Osaka here. I think that, you know, talking about the head-to-head and taking some context, if you remember the Beijing loss, she was exhausted. That was kind of post-US Open, and you could see it on the court. Even the match before, I mean, you could see it coming that she was going to take a loss. Jorge makes a good point about Sevastova's serve. I mean, Wang had a lot of problems with her, and I consider Wang to be at least an above-average returner. But I think that, once again, if Osaka's in form, I think she wins this. I don't know if she'll cover a spread, but I definitely like Osaka to win this match.
So that's interesting. Two of us on Osaka. Jorge's going to pass. And finally, yes. Madison Grand Slam Keys playing Queen Alina, Svitolina. Jorge, what does it feel like to finally have the final standing player of the net worth three?
I don't think since we started the podcast he's ever had Ostapenko standing alone. It would if we had started Miami last year, if we'd started earlier maybe, but it feels nice. Oh, you know, that was a great, you know, kind of gutty performance. I know some people, you know, really wanted to slam her as a pusher, not being aggressive enough last night. She has a shoulder issue. I don't care whether other fans believe it or not or think they were strategic MTOs, although who takes a strategic MTO after winning the second set, forcing a third, and then stopping play for 10 minutes seems pretty stupid to me. But, you know, she's got a shoulder issue. You could see it in her serve, some of her strokes, not able to put away some sitters as well as she would have liked. I love that she's there. If she was 100%, if you remember the 2017 U.S. Open fourth round in this exact spot in New York instead of Melbourne, these two played one hell of a match. I mean, the shot making on both sides was crazy. If we can get a repeat of that, oh my gosh, will I be excited. Betting wise, this is of the eight matches to be played on the women's side, this is number eight on matches that I think I have an edge on or that I would bet. It comes in even you know, below Sloan and Pavlyuchenkova. You can't play the over, you can't play the under, you can't play a side, in my opinion. There's just no angle here for me. Same as Pavs and Sloan. Sloan could win in two, Pavs could win in two. It could go three long, you know, it could be an over, it could go either way. I'm not gonna touch either of those matches.
So what do you think, Spread? Do you have any plays or leans here? If not, what do you expect to see? It should be a really exciting matchup.
I like Keys here a lot. I don't think that we are seeing the best Svitolina, and I think that's going to be too bad for the future I placed after we answered Kelly's questions on the mailbag pod. But I think that Keys is just playing lights out, and I know we kind of dismissed her and didn't even really talk about her during the preview pod because we had no idea what to expect, but this is pretty much the best-case scenario for her. I'm sitting here at minus 145. I definitely don't want to lay games, so I will probably be parlaying her with something. Maybe an Osaka Keys parlay will make jump into my card there. But I definitely like Keys here, and my main thing is I think that she's playing pretty much as good as I've seen her play in a long time, and I don't think that Svitolina is at her best right now. And I think that the injury combined with the sharpness of Keys' play right now is going to be too much for her to overcome. And that's, I hope I'm wrong, but you know, I'm kind of hedging because I
you know
have
what?
The future
that's,
on Svit,
that's a very hedgeable match, too. I don't think that she's 100%. For a Svitolina future, you know, she's not playing someone that it's like, I can't hedge here because she's super favorite. She's a super fave, even though she's hurt and you could see the upset happening. It's just too expensive to hedge it. You know, you can do it nicely here. And I mean, that parlay, too, I might tail. I don't love Osaka and I don't love the Keys match, but I might throw down, you know, a quarter unit just to degen on a plus 175. Yeah, that's not a terrible.
Yeah, because it's
going to
get you close to
pretty. Again,
pretty
I would
close
do it casually. I wouldn't be going like a full unit, but I might tail that. And I love the hedging option you have there with Keys. If you have a Svitolina future, that's definitely a look because she'd get Osaka next round. It's going to be tough to. If Osaka gets through, but it'll be tough to hedge it with Osaka there because Osaka will be a super favorite in that case. Yeah, with the health
Osaka's
concerns,
gonna
especially
come in, what,
if
minus
she aggravates it more
minus
tomorrow. It's, yeah, you know, that's a dead future walking, yeah. But hopefully for your sake, for your wallet's sake, and for my fandom's sake, somehow she keeps going.
So speaking of futures, let's take a look at the last 16 that are left and see if we can find any value here. You know, for starters, Serena Williams, obviously the favorite at 2.25 to 1. I'm actually going to do the quick math here to see what a rolling money line parlay might look at this point and whether you might be able to do better with that. Her line with 250 tonight actually leaves me optimistic that that might work out. But while I'm doing that math, let's look at some of the other names and get spread in Jorge's thoughts here. We've got Kerber at 5.5 to 1, Osaka at 9 to 1, Kvitova 10, Svitolina 12, Stevens 12, Barty at 14, which I think is actually close to her opening price. Sharapova 14, Halep 14, Keys 16, Muguruza 18, and Pliskova at 18. Everybody else is pretty big numbers. 22 for Anna Samova, Sevastova 25 to 1, and then Pavs 50 to 1, and Danielle Rose Collins at 125 to 1. So while I was kind of reading those numbers off, spread, did you hear anything that you liked?
I don't think I will play any, but if I were to recommend some, I think the two that jump out to me are, I'm looking at five dimes. I have Keys at 18 to 1, and Muguruza at 25 to 1. I think those are the only two at this point that are worth it. When I jumped on looking for one, I wanted to jump in on Kerber because, like Jorge said, she's been playing lights out. And but 6 to 1 is definitely not enough. So the two that I think present value would be Madison Keys.
Yeah, 18 to 1, I'll go ahead and say. I mean, I've got my Barty future at plus 2,500 pre-tournament from Pinnacle. She still looks like one of the better options here to me. I'm going to go ahead and get rid of Osaka, Svitolina, and Keys personally, just because, and while I do think Madison gets through Alina and probably more comfortably than people realize, especially if Alina's hurt, that Osaka Keys potential, that's so hard to try and, you know, you've almost got to take both there. And I think whoever does come out of there has a great shot. Serena's price is also going to drop like crazy after she beats Halep. The only reason why it's even at plus 225 is because she's playing Halep. So I would stay away from Osaka, Svitolina, Keys, because they both have to win two insanely tough matchups, all three of them. Obviously, I'm not going to take a Collins or a Pavs. I'll probably let my Barty future ride for now, and I would agree with spread. Maybe Muguruza might be value here, because I think, you know, at evens against Pliskova, if she gets through that, goodness, I mean, she'll be in form. She'll have beaten down players she should beat down. She'll have come through two, you know, harder hitters that are going to give her more problems. She'll have seen multiple styles. She's clearly motivated. She's checking all the boxes, and I'm seeing plus 2,200 right now at Bet365. So certainly worth a look if you're looking for a you know, post week one, pre week two outright wager. I think Muguruza might be a look here.
That's interesting. I like that. So I'm flipping through here. I got a parlay calculator open in front of me. So we know Halep's two. We know some Serena's minus 250 against Halep. What do you guys think you would make Serena Williams against, you know, Muguruza or Pliskova? I was thinking maybe like minus 400.
Serena,
I don't know if is that
maybe minus 300.
So Serena and either Pliskova or Muguruza.
Yeah,
I figure those two are pretty close,
I think,
probably.
I would line it even closer than you've got the Halep line. I think you would see it around that, but I think both of them have a better shot at beating Serena than Simona Halep does. Just stylistically, you're going to have to hit with her, and you're going to have to, you know, dictate your own serve. The problem with Halep is both her serve and Serena's serve, Serena's dictating the points, right? Whereas with Muguruza and Pliskova, they've got serves that can move Serena and generate some free points. So I don't know.
The only thing that you could say for Halep is she's going to be the one that will
if
test
she gets
Serena's
balls,
fitness.
Yeah.
Out of all the players, you know, these three players, that'll be Halep's thing. Is she can retrieve and maybe, you know, wear Serena down, which I kind of felt like Kerber did in that match. But you have to. I think this is in much better shape
that,
than she was in Wimbledon.
Like I said, I would take Muguruza as my only future if I were to place one. I'm just going to stick with Barty, but. I think that she's got a better shot than even Halep does at taking Serena down, especially if she's in form and beats Carolina in straights. I think that plus 2,200 seems value. I don't think you can line Serena minus 300. Now I'm starting to really get curious as to what that line will be after it comes out. Because I don't think you can line at minus 300. I think it's got to be closer to minus 200.
So if I make her minus 300 in her last three matches, so she'd be minus 300 against, you know, either Muguruza or Pliskova. And the next match you're looking at Osaka, Svitolina, Ortiz probably. You know, I don't know if minus 300 is too expensive there or not. And then in the final,
I think
whoever
it's too
comes out of the bottom half.
If it, assuming it'd be in Osaka, yeah, with Osaka's recent win, minus 200 has to be the max there. And then, I mean, I'm going off my bracket because whatever, but I had her against Kerber in the final. And, you know, so basically, you know, if she's potentially playing two players that she's lost to in Grand Slam finals, I don't see how you'd put them at above minus 200 there.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, so I think there's actually maybe some value here in opening, doing a rolling parlay. If you're looking for Serena to actually win here, that 225 price essentially means that, you know, she'd be a minus 300 favorite in the other three matches besides the Halep match. And the more I look at this, she's going to face some really top talent here. And it sounds like you guys are kind of on board with the idea that she'd be a little better than minus 300 in some of these matches. So, you know, if you're looking to bet Serena here, open up a parlay, grab the Halep money line and three open spots and just keep filling it in as it goes along. Yeah, so let me see real quick. So, you know, at minus 300, we're about even. Let's say she's minus 250 in the next four matches. We're looking at odds of, you know, plus 280. And again, if she's even more aggressive than that, you could probably even get it up to over 3-1.
I think it'll be up above 3-1.
Always a good strategy.
I mean, imagine she rematches Kerber. I can't see how that she's going to be, you know, more than minus 200 when Kerber just beat him in their most recent Grand Slam appearance. So.
Yeah, so looking at futures, I don't think there was anything else that I had circled. Stevens 12-1 is kind of interesting. She seems like she's playing some really good tennis, but just a really tough route. I mean, at this point, everyone left has a really tough route to the final, but that caught my eye a little bit. I might look at that a little tighter, but nothing that really jumps out to me.
Yeah, I still like Barty.
Otherwise, how about you guys?
I don't like the number at plus 1,600 nearly as much as plus 2,500, obviously, but I probably won't be laying anything down. I might have talked myself into... you know, a 0.3 or 0.35 unit play on Muguruza, which would then imply that I would have her winning tomorrow against Pliskova. But you know what? I think that would be the only one I add. I'd look down at those numbers. Everyone else is just so smushed together, and they've all got equally tough paths to the final. And yet most of these people are at plus 1,000 or plus 1,500, whereas Muguruza's got, you know, the same tough path, is just as talented as all of them, but is it plus 2,200? I think that's the only play there. Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, and on five dimes, she's plus 2,500.
Yeah, if you like Muguruza in that match tomorrow, skip taking the money line. Just grab the future, and, you know, she moves ahead. You've got a ton of value at 22, 25-1 with somebody in the final eight. Anybody you thinking about grabbing spread?
Nope, I'm sticking with Svitolina. And Stevens, I still think that, you know, shoulder injury aside, I don't see any reason. I don't see numbers that are jumping out to me that I need to take. And like I said, Svitolina, I mean, that shoulder, if she is 100%, she's definitely a force, and she can win this tournament and have her be her maiden Grand Slam, which I kind of expected before the tournament started. And Stevens is that wild card where when she's on, she can beat anybody, including Serena Williams. So. I'm going to stick with those two.
Awesome. So that was just about everything that I had to talk about. So unless you guys have anything else, just wish the listeners great luck and another good week of Australian Open tennis.
Good luck in all your wagers.